Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. Good to have you with us. It is a President's Day. Happy President's Day for those of you that are dialing and listening to us live. Also, it's February 17th. We always put that out there, as many of you are listening to the broadcast on a downloaded basis. And I just want to make sure you all know where that's at and how you can listen to the broadcast. You can go to our website. You can listen to it by just going to the link, lickinonlending.com. Or you can sign up for it to be notified you. It will bring you a reminder. And then also you can sign up through iTunes is another way, other ways in which you can download it. Most people choose to listen to the broadcast, again, on a downloaded basis, and that is being listened to all over the country, now all over the world, like hearing from Brazil, India, Spain. I just got some emails. England. People that download and listen to our broadcast, I'm sure it's just to kind of figure out what's going on in the U.S. as it relates to the economy. And, as you know, of course, real estate's driving a lot of our economy. So it's very interesting to see where we're having or drawing our listeners from, literally now all over the world, but you being a part of this broadcast and telling others about it. I'm excited. Of course, I'm excited about every broadcast we do because I learn every time we have on. I'm the host of this broadcast. But it's such a privilege to have with me today a friend of mine, Fred Glick, and a new friend, George Cosimos. And I'm really excited to have them on and talk about an initiative that they've started that is getting some serious traction. It's called Stop FEMA Now. If you are not aware of the new maps and the increased premiums, It has a potential in specific markets, many parts of the country, to absolutely shut down lending and shut down the real estate market. And that you say, well, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Not really, when you sit and listen to this, and that's why I'm so excited about them having them, both Fred and George, on the broadcast. Again, what we're purpose of today's broadcast is other than just to keep you informed of all the stuff that's going on across the country, but really it's also to give you an example of a grassroots effort that can change our industry. And of course, we want to make you aware of the Stop FEMA Now initiative. It's important. I'm excited to have them on. Special welcome goes out to our first-time listeners, many of whom are tuning in for this first time because George has been tweeting the heck out of this, as Fred has been, and telling everybody about the broadcast. And we're thrilled to have that all those that have never been to the broadcast before. Again, you're joining literally tens of thousands that listen to the broadcast each week, and we're excited to have you be with us. We have 300,000, I think it's 320,000 downloads of this broadcast. It's astounding to me that we are there. Check out the website. You'll hear more about the story. You can go to the Facebook page. You go to the LinkedIn page. We're all over, of course, tweet it out, whatever you do. Another thing that I'm really excited about is the fact that we have formed a new partnership with a company called Velma, Velma.com, and they are a direct marketing, snail mail, email marketing company that is just doing an outstanding job getting the word out each week to, you know, literally thousands upon thousands of people that we have registered with us. By the way, if you have not registered with us, be sure to link with me via LinkedIn or through our Facebook page. Those are two ways we can bring you and make sure you get on there. Send me an email. We'll make sure the folks at Velma get you added to the list so that you get the notifications each and every week. But I want to tell you about this relationship because, you know, our last mortgage company we had in Southern California was direct mail. I believe in direct consumer, direct relationships, direct marketing. But I got to tell you, I am blown away with the service, the quality of the way they manage these. They manage these lists. The lists that have come to me that have been people have that I pulled off of my LinkedIn is how, if you're getting an email, and that's how I initially started this, is LinkedIn. They really manage that list. They guard it, protect it, and that's, for me, probably the most critical thing when you're dealing with email direct marketing, is that they set it up where people that want to be here are getting the email, and we're not spamming it out to the whole world. So good to have a relationship with them. If you have not already done so, we formed this relationship, or just launched it last week, we talked about it, but head out to their website, www.velma.com. So it's a new partnership, and we're excited about it. I want to talk about United Guarantee, our other sponsor who is here with us each and every week. They have just done an outstanding job of coming up with the QMI product, which really helps make sure all the loans are QMI or QM compliant. And if you have not checked out that product called QMI, be sure to do. You can go to the website, www.UG, standing for United Guarantee Corp, abbreviation for corporation.com, or you can go to our website, lickitonlending.com, click on the ad on the upper right-hand corner, and you will be connected to their website. Get a hold of one of their representatives and have them come in and talk to you about their QMI product, as well as the other suite of products. Great group of folks there at United T. Be sure to tell them that you thank them for being a sponsor of our radio program. It makes this possible. It helps us defray the cost of this. This is a money-losing proposition, but if it helps keep the industry informed, we're accomplishing what we want to do, so we appreciate anyone who gets in and helps us get the word out. Appreciate it so much. Let's see here. The markets are closed, but Joe Farr is open for business. At least he has been kind enough to dial in on this non-news financial news day, and good to have you with us, Joe.
Well, thank you. I was just wondering how those people in Great Britain listening to the show can understand me.
Oh, yeah, you speak Texan so well, and they speak British.
Yeah.
They love your voice. I get more comments. Folks, I got to tell Joe a little bit. One of the things he says, I don't know when I invited him to be on the broadcast. He says, well, I have a strong accent. Well, people want to listen. It's so distinctive, and I get so many compliments. Not only your presentation, but they enjoy your personality, Joe. So what do you got for us? Today's President's Day. Markets are closed, but
today's an easy day. No news. But let's talk about last week. MBS prices fell about 50 basis points, which equates to about a 7 basis point increase in rates. There were essentially two events last week that moved the market. One was Janet Yellen's testimony before Congress, and the other was really pretty weak retail sales numbers. So there were really no big surprises in what Yellen had to say, which made it a little surprising that it did move the market. Prices got worse during her testimony. The stock market improved during her testimony, and part of that was, there were some people looking for hints that she might say something to slow down the pace of the taper.
Right.
She didn't say that. In fact, she came back and said that in order to do that, the economy's got to become significantly worse. She didn't say it was bad now, but it would have to get significantly worse in order for that to slow down. She offered a far more upbeat outlook for the economy than what the recent data has indicated, and she has taken a little longer-term view of things. So on her testimony, stocks rose and MBS prices fell. And then on Thursday, retail sales came out much lower than expected. January retail sales fell 0.4 from December. There was a small fall anticipated, but only a 0.1. And so the weak economic data on Thursday helped offset some of the market reaction to Janet Yellen's testimony, but only a part of it. And so for the week, we ended down about 50 basis points, like I said. This is a short week, but there's a pretty full calendar of potential market-moving events, starting with manufacturing data. We get that on tomorrow, and then some on Thursday with the Empire State Index and the Philly Fed. And then on Wednesday, we get housing data starting with housing starts, and then on Friday, existing home sales. Inflation data comes out Wednesday and Thursday with PPI first and CPI second, and then the minutes of the last Fed meeting come out on Wednesday. Any of those could be market moving, so pay attention. MBS prices are off the best levels of the year, but they're still well above where they were most of last month even. So, seen a little drop, but we're still at pretty good levels.
One of our regular listeners texted me, say, ask Joe if he thought Yellen's comments were consistent with what he anticipated. I mean, was there any surprises, I think, is the message here in Yellen's
testimony?
No,
her message was clear, and that was things are going to continue the way they have been under Bernanke. I think that the weak data that had come out here recently caused people that maybe had a little shorter-term view of things to that they might slow down the taper, but they really do have a longer-term view of things, and her outlook's still pretty strong. So I wasn't surprised by that. I didn't think there was much chance they would slow it down. And she said the right thing. You know, if the economy slows down considerably, significantly, then they have that as a tool they can use to try to prop it up a little bit. But I think they're on a pace to continue to reduce the amount of purchases and hopefully have it done by the end of the year.
You know, there was interesting to see there seems to be more less dissension and more unity amongst the Fed presidents out there. James Bulliard, I think, is it out of the St. Louis Fed, actually sounded more consistent, where he seemed to be contrary to Bernanke. His comments seemed to be more in line and step and supporting Yellen. I wonder if that's just a temporary, hey, we got someone new, so supporting the
honeymoon period. Part of it is, Bernanke's last meeting, he wound up getting a unanimous vote, and I wondered if that was a little bit of a structured thing, but and Janet Yellen's going to have a little bit of a honeymoon here, but I see things becoming less unanimous than what we've seen in the past. The Fisher coming on, the hawks, there are a couple more hawks coming on, and I think Janet Yellen's more in a dove camp, and so I do think that there'll be a more contentious board as opposed to one that's unanimous.
Yeah, I was wondering if we're going to return to that. It's always interesting to see the dissension, which means this is not a kumbaya group by any means. They speak their mind, and there's a lot of them that are very concerned that this tapering program, which probably is explanation why it's going to do. But it's interesting also, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I was really fascinated with the fact that weak retail sales that came out, I believe it was on Thursday, that caused for, was it Thursday? Yeah, Thursday weak retail sales came out. And I tell you, the market reacted. I mean, rates started going up, and there was a correction on that day, and then we went right back to it. So the upward pressure seems to have returned. And if you do not have a service like MBS Quote Line, you are behind the eight ball. I sit and look. It's up here on my screen right now. I have it on all the time. I listen to what going on in the news, but it really forces me to go listen to how the market's reacting. And again, it'll look like a flat line there today if you look at the charts, but it does give you, for example, economic events, everything that's coming up. So valuable service, short, sweet, to the point, and it is to the point, gets you right to the information you need rather than all the analysis. I don't care about analysis when I'm trying to figure out whether or not to lock or not. Again, our clients are locking or not. I don't lock, but anyway, it's really a valuable service. So if you want to learn more, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quote Line can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quote Line monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quote Line, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quote Line can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
All right, good to have this. Paul Molow is taking the day off, President's Day. I'm looking at his website. We usually have Paul on. For those of you that are new listeners, Paul is a veteran reporter on the mortgage industry and has been writing for years and years. He recently joined, or I guess it's been over a year now, he's been with IMF News, and you can check out their news by going to imfnews.com. Check it out. Great website. And I'm looking at it. He's obviously taking the day off because it's got the Friday news up. This is usually up to date on just everything that's happening in the industry. Great stuff. Great way of kind of getting the inside scoop and sometimes the news before it hits the big publications. Alice Alvey, good to have you with us. I cracked up, Alice, when I was looking at your notes before the broadcast. He goes, I've got to bring up a four-letter word on our broadcast. So go ahead, Alice. Tell us what it is.
The four-letter, can you hear me? The four-letter word is HMDA.
Yes. HMDA. Yeah.
HMDA, the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act. You know, in my previous life as a compliance officer and running operations for a national bank, we did wholesale and retail. I inherited a really big HMDA mess. The company had gone from, you know, a couple thousand loans to over 43,000 units that had to be on the HMDA report.
Wow.
And somebody went, here, you can, you know how to fix problems, fix this. And, you know,
fishes.
Monsters, right? And the report's due in a couple months, right? So, I mean, you just, it's this insane amount of data already, right? So far, you know, with the data that we have to report, it's ranging, depending on your loan, you know, about, I don't know, 15 to 20 data fields right now. The first piece I want to tell you about HMDA data is, you know, it is usable for marketing information, and the CFPB
right.
has posted their new tool. And so that went up last week, and I went out and played with it a little bit. It's really pretty slick. I mean, you have to go away from the site to the FFIEC site to actually look up a lender number. If you want to actually check on your competition and see how many FHA loans they've done in a particular market, for example, but go check out the tool. It is really slick. I looked up, you know, Michigan FHA to female borrowers in 2012, and that was 13,500 loans that were on the report. You can drill that down to say Bank of America did 378 of those loans. So, you know, I think it's worth checking out. Like I said, yeah, I think there's some good marketing information in there. So they're getting to where, you know, and it's just 2012 data. 2013, obviously, is just now getting reported. I hope everybody's just about ready to hit submit on that report because you'll have just a couple of weeks, right? You've got to get it out a week from Friday. And so that's why I think I'd talk about what we have to look forward to. The CFPB is having their Small Business Administration meeting. So if you remember from the other parts of the regulation, when they went through this meeting process, they did come out with a few good things and a few changes, especially for the way we use loan officer compensation and QM. So the Small Business Administration meetings previously with other regulators really didn't hit the papers that much. But for us, there's so much on the table right now with this that I think it's definitely worth watching. Out of the information that Cordray gave us for what they're going to talk about in this meeting, Dave, is 25 potential new fields that would have to get reported on every loan. It's crazy.
Wow.
I don't know if they're trying to throw everything at the table to see what will stick and what they can get. The regulation, Dodd-Frank added about, I don't know, 8 or 9, you know, depending on how you count them. The Dodd-Frank Act definitely wanted to be considering that we were going to add the value, the age of the borrower, the credit score, indicate whether it was a broker or a lender, add the loan officer ID number, and put in some APR and points and fees information. This write-up that the CFPB has on their website now, so you can go to their website and see their summary of what they plan on talking about, that's where I'm getting the over 25 new data fields that they're considering.
Mm.
I don't know, have you ever been through a HMDA audit? Have you ever been through an audit where they're checking all your HMDA data?
No, it's been a long time. Yeah, we sold our last company. Yeah, it's 12 years ago is when I sold my last company. So my interest in my last company. So I exited at that point. But we have a lot of clients going through it, so I feel
yeah,
like I'm going through
meant,
it
yeah.
with them. Yeah. Our clients, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, and I Yeah, and when you look at trying to add this amount of data, I have mixed feelings on, is this a benefit to companies or less? So if you look at that, the regulator now would have all this additional information. Some of the additional fields they want to add in are whether there was, what was the results from automated underwriting. They want to actually include detail about what did you have in block one on your good faith estimate? What did you actually use for discount points? What was your base rate? What was your risk-adjusted rate? Just real significant interest rate information and underwriting information. And so part of me says, all right, well, if the regulator gets that up front, maybe they won't have to come in and stay in my shop long enough to actually dig all that out of a loan file, get a separate report for me. But I'm more of the camp of that's too much information because now they're going to make assumptions without even coming in and looking at my loan files. I was interested in your opinion. Is more data better for regulators or less data?
Well, anytime you have more data, it just creates more exposure is my attitude. You know, they're combing through all this data, and they're looking for more and more data from their standpoint. I think it's, you know, from their perspective, it gives them more granularity in looking at it. So I think there's several aspects of it that, as you talk about, Alice, the first thing is folks, if you think this humdrum report goes into onto a shelf or into a database and they don't look at it, wrong. They are looking at it. And the biggest thing, I think, and Alice, what I'm hearing you say is they are actually wanting more data so they can begin to get greater insights into your lending processes. So is it a good thing? Depends on, from a regulator standpoint, more granularity. For a lender, I think it's more exposure. So you pick which side you're on. I don't think it's a good thing. No.
I'm on that. I think, too, the other thing that's going to happen is obviously behind the scenes they want more data because they can automate the assessment process, right?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, for a company that sets a low, a higher credit score threshold, and I think it could potentially tighten lending for some companies who say, well, if I keep my parameters at this certain level, then maybe I won't be on the radar for the analytics that come out of the HMDA reporting and who actually would get selected for an audit. They are also looking at wanting to add a field that would report if you are a QM loan or not. That is that right there is going to put the lenders interested or, you know, considering dabbling in non-QM loans to go, well, I'm going to be front and center on my HMDA report. Not that there aren't other factors that might flag that a little bit anyway, but this is going to be a straight-up yes or no where you're essentially certifying on your report to its accuracy. So that begs questions about refiling, if there are errors. You know, it's just a process nightmare, too, to add all these fields.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you posted from the Small Business Administration meetings. They are looking at changing who has to file, and instead of it being a 100-loan threshold, it being a 25-loan threshold, so more people would get looped into having to file small correspondent lenders. So it's a really big deal, and we'll continue to watch for you. The comment period is not open yet. There isn't any action item other than contacting the CFPB as you read through this. They'll still have to publish a proposed rule a little bit later in the year.
Alice, someone just texted me listening, one of our listeners, and he said, Dave, she gave you the answer at the beginning when she said it's a four-letter word. Why did you struggle with the answer? I did struggle with the answer. I'm trying to give a price to the coin here. It was an open book test.
People. That's why I call it a four-letter word. It's like you can't even get it right. I mean, there's sometimes you're trying to tell the SFIC, no, this is the census tract number, and they're going, yeah, but our computer says it should be this number, and the nitty-gritty of this report is just crazy. Those who know the devil in the details on this thing, I'm sure are just going, please, no more fields. We will get some. It's a matter of how many.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to have Tony Garritano. He, too, is taking the day off with President's Day, but normally he'd be saying it's got to be driving the technology component side of the industry crazy as well because they have that many more fields that they got to add. And if their world isn't complicated enough, it is another regulator just complicating it even for folks. I sit and look at the aspect of your technology and your usage fees. I think there's a big bump in usage fees or annual renewable fees going up as a result of all that's going on with the technology. Where costs are going up because of the regulations. And so, yeah, it's a four-letter word for many involved in this process. And guess what today's broadcast about? Another... Most
Sorry,
of acronyms
go ahead.
Are four-letter, but we have another four-letter. In fact, it starts with the F word. I mean, the F letter as four. We're talking FEMA, so you should think about another. This week might say this is the four-letter word broadcast this week. So we're concentrating on the ugly stuff on regulations and what it can do. Alice, thank you so much for being here with us on this holiday and bringing us up to date on the four-letter words from the regulators. Appreciate it so much. We do not have Tony Garitano, and so right out, nor the Prophet Doctor. They're out, and so we're going to be right after the break getting right into the discussion with our special guests. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. We appreciate you tuning in. Again, welcome to all of you new listeners that are as a result of the many text messages and social media posts out there that got sent out by our friends George and Fred, who are our new special guests. We got as our special guests George Casibos and Fred Glick with us on the broadcast. And George started, sometimes I go to bios and I look at their bios. These guys are veterans of the mortgage industry, been around forever. A little background, Fred, I met Fred debating him on CNBC is where I met Fred, and I go, I enjoyed it so much that I wrote the producers that I talked all the time at CNBC. I said, would you send me Fred's information? Fred was gracious to take my call, and not only that, he jumped in an airplane, flew to Austin. We broke bread, had some great barbecue, and he flew home. And it just started a long, lifelong friendship with Fred Glick. And, you're known by the company you keep. Fred has different views than I do at times, but not on FEMA. We're going to talk about that. We should line up with a lot of stuff regarding the industry. But we have other sides. It's fun to debate him, but he's so intelligent about his dialogue that I really enjoy a good, intelligent debate and dialogue. And that's what Fred brings to the table every single time. Funny as heck, too. Golly, he's got a sense of humor. He is connecting me up with George Casimos, who is out of the Jersey area, and it's really George that really started what the topic that we're going to be talking about now in the initiative Stop FEMA Now. So first of all, I want to say welcome to my old friend Fred Glick and new friend George Casimos. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks. Great to be here. And just a reminder out there, Fred is a four-letter word, too, so I want to keep it
That's
clean.
Fred and FEMA. Yeah. I love that,
yeah.
Derek. See, there, I gave you one more. I'll use that next time we're debating him on national television. I wonder if I'll get away with that. I may not get invited back if I do that. Let's get into, Fred is relocated from the East Coast out to California, so you're new California residents.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I got
the taxes
every day.
I know. Taxes weren't bad enough. Or the weather. Was it the weather or the taxes on the east that drove you? Well, it could have been taxes. California's right up there at the worst. But so it had to be the weather that attracted you. So.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Palm trees and other things out there. We won't go there. Anyway, let's get into the FEMA discussion because, George, I want to start off by talking to you or asking you about really what started the whole Stop FEMA Now initiative. You're the one that really got this whole thing kicked off, and it started as a result of an event. Would you fill our listeners in on that?
Yeah, basically, I live in Toms River, New Jersey. I'm a realtor and a broker. Our home got damaged during Superstorm Sandy. Millions of people had to rebuild. We started rebuilding right after October when the storm hit in 2012, and about 2 months into rebuilding, my neighbor comes over to me with a FEMA sheet, and he says, we have to raise our home or our flood insurance is going to go from $1,000 a year to $30,000 a year.
You're serious? $1,000 a year to $30,000, and all they have to do, again, quote, all they do in quotes, is raise the house 4 feet. Right, no small feet. My God.
Right. That was for hundreds of thousands of people. See, we initially thought this was a Sandy issue. So it was a couple hundred thousand people in New York and New Jersey who FEMA did us a favor and released these flood maps to us early to help us rebuild. But as we dug into this, like the seven steps of grieving in a death, we started digging into this deeper, and we found out it was a national issue, and it all came about from the Biggert Waters. So it had nothing to do with Sandy, and it has to do with Biggert Waters. And there's 5.5 million flood policy homes and commercial properties in America that are in a flood zone, and they're going to have to do the same thing.
Wow. That's it. It's just really astounding in any way. So that's what really caught your attention, and then you started taking actions, and you really started doing some things. And that's, again, the twofold purpose of having you and Fred on is to really do two things. First of all, heighten the awareness of what FEMA is going on with FEMA, and this whole discussion will be about that. But also, George, kudos to you because you did not wait down for someone to start something. You got to work, and you set up a Facebook page, Stop FEMA Now, and you began to do the research. Give us a little insights, and then I want to get into Fred, how when you looped in with Fred into the process, what was that you know, what, do you love Facebook? Do you spend a lot of time on it? Or is this just say, I got to find a platform to stand on and start shouting this out?
Yeah, I'm well over 40. I don't care what you ate for dinner last night or if you like dogs. I'm not a big fan of Facebook or Twitter, any of that stuff. You know, we're the older generation. If you owned a home, you're probably not on Facebook and Twitter, but it was the easiest way. We had to gauge if there was any interest in it. You know, if I was the only person
right.
who had a problem with $30,000 a year flood insurance premiums. So, you know, my children helped me with a Facebook page, Stop FEMA Now. And we had a little meeting in a sub shop. 22 people showed up in late January of 2013.
Wow.
We had another meeting a few weeks later, and the police shut it down because it was a fire hazard. So many people came. And,
wow.
And at that point, we knew that there was an interest. We ended up getting a StopFEMANow.com site, and we started having these meetings / rallies, not only in Toms River, New Jersey, where I live. We started going up to Point Pleasant. We went to Atlantic City. We started going into Long Island and the Rockaways in New York, everywhere, to raise awareness that you're not alone. You know, when you receive that piece of paper and somebody knocks on your door and says, 30 grand or raise your house, well, you know, that's a shakedown. In Jersey or in the Midwest, that's a shakedown. So I just wanted everybody to know that you're not alone, and together, as one voice, we can make a change.
And you have. Fred, when did you get involved, and how did your involvement start in?
Well, I can't remember the exact date, but I just started seeing these posts about it and realized from being both a mortgage broker and a real estate broker and in different parts of the country that this is going to be a mess. The first thing I started thinking of is the fact that people are going from these policies of, you know, 1,000 or less. We've even seen, I think, George, there was one in New Jersey where somebody was paying about $400 or $500 a year, and they got a bill for $30,000 a year. It was insane, and I said to myself, this could be the second wave of foreclosures because people were saying, I can't afford this for my $75,000 house for my insurance to go up this much. I'm just going to give it back
You're
to the
serious.
Bank. Yeah. Well, they've been talking about this. I see these tweets everywhere. I just wanted to add to something George started talking about, and this is going to sound crazy to most of you, but one of the biggest sets of people that have been pushing this besides George is a guy named Jeff Smead out of, believe it or not, Northeast Pennsylvania. You'd think, what the heck is up there? But there are streams, there are underground streams, there's rivers. You just have no idea where these things are coming from, that people have had flood insurance. And it's like, surprise, how about Colorado? We were talking about that earlier. Runoffs from all the snow that's going to come down into rivers.
It's
that's the Colorado
yeah.
River. Yeah, this is all over the country. And
right.
I don't want to see this turn into a nightmare, which it absolutely could be. So I got involved. I started a Twitter page called FEMA Gate. I gave it a gate. I don't know if there's somebody.
So
I don't know if there's
that's
anybody out there.
That's so Fred's click. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just jump right on it, make it a political nightmare. And then I sort of started getting involved in the politics and figuring out what happened. And in 2012, when this bill went down, it was kind of buried in a transportation bill. So, you know, these things get passed in Congress that the bills come out, but the rules don't get written until after the bill is actually done. Dodd-Frank is a great example of that, guys. We all know what happened there. And I started figuring out who the people were who got involved and why they got involved with it. And I could see now Maxine Waters is not really a friend to the mortgage industry, and she did us a whammy here, but she actually came out and recanted the unintended consequences of this thing because she realized finally that people's bills were going to go up so intently. So we kept going through. George, Jeff, everybody did an amazing job of tweeting and pushing and calling and calling and calling and calling the senators, meeting with Menendez and some other people. George can tell you exactly who we met with. And we got this thing through the Senate, bipartisan, on a, I think it was 64-30-something, George, if you remember the exact number.
68-32.
68-32. I mean, that's phenomenal in this day and age. But they saw the thing. And now the bill has moved over to the House, where there are now over 223 sponsors, so it could pass. But here's
wow.
The politics, kids. Yeah, here's the politics. Eric Cantor, you'll see him in the news every day now. He is the de facto Speaker of the House right now. It's obvious that John Boehner's not going to come back as Speaker, and Cantor is trying to move up. And so he has come out with a bunch of other congressmen to put their own bill together that allegedly is better than the Senate bill. They don't have enough sponsors, but he's going to bring that to a vote, but he won't bring the Senate bill to a vote. And neither will Boehner for some reason. And the only thing we can think of is the insurance industry wants to be in the flood insurance business, and they want to eventually take FEMA out of it. And the only way for them to do it is to jack premiums and get people used to paying higher premiums and therefore corner the market. And everybody complains, and George, I want you to elaborate on this. This last thing I'll say, you know, Dave, I can get going for hours. But
give you the mic. We won't have a lot of
time. Goodbye. See you later. The whole thing about FEMA, and a lot of these congressmen are saying, oh, FEMA is broke, and they need the money, and all these disasters, Katrina and Sandy and others have bankrupted
wiped
FEMA,
them out.
And that's why we need to jack it up. Now, George has some amazing numbers about this that'll tell you it's just not true. So, George, hit it.
Yeah, I was wanting to go there too quickly, but I'm looking at my questions. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but go ahead, George, because that is really important. A lot of people say, yeah, but we've got that. Joe and I were talking about that before the broadcast. Go ahead, George.
Well, there's one thing I want to get back to what's going on in the House is, you know, Representative Grimm is sponsoring the Flood Insurance Affordability Act, the same bill in the House as got passed in the Senate. And when it got voted the first time around, it got voted on partisan lines, and everybody's saying this is not a partisan issue. Representative Grimm, who's a Republican, did not even vote for his own bill. I mean, you know,
you're serious.
I don't know what else to say about that. And then the second and third time around, a couple other folks jumped on, and now it's gaining traction. Because bottom line is, if you're a representative and you look at how many flood policies are in your legislative district, you have a lot of them. Well, you better change your vote. I don't care what Boehner or anybody else says. And a prime example is Representative Cassidy from Louisiana did not vote for us the first time. Abstained from it the second time, and the third time voted for it, and now he's gotten taken out of his leadership in the House. You know, so this is a very, very big and polarizing issue. But to get back to
you would not think Did you would not think that would be the case, George? I mean, with this being such a killer for so many homeowners that are in those floodplains, you just can't. I don't understand that.
Well, you as a common sense person and a rational numbers
yeah, right.
guy, if you get $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000 flood bills, it's going to devastate the housing market. It's going to make the 2007 housing bubble look like a walk in the park. I mean, you know, nobody can get straddled on with these things. And here's the fallacies coming in from the House. You know, only millionaires need this. You can only buy the largest amount of flood insurance you can purchase is max $250,000. There's no mansions worth $250,000, number one. But here's the numbers, okay? Only 44% of our flood insurance premium actually goes toward payouts of claims. 56% of it gets eaten up by FEMA. So we're subsidizing FEMA. We're not subsidizing flood insurance premiums, number one. Number two
yeah.
is the conservatives in Congress are saying we don't want to subsidize flood insurance premium. Number one, they just passed a farm subsidy bill, and the Republican congressmen who've been fighting this flood insurance bill, they just passed the farm bill, first vote out. And they gave them $7 billion additional subsidy for the farm bill, number one. But number two is there is no subsidization within the flood insurance program. Basically, we've been short, according to FEMA, $24 billion. That is alone. In the majority of the years, the NFIP makes a profit, and we've been paying that down. But more importantly, the $17 billion charge from Hurricane Katrina was because the Army Corps of Engineer levee system around New Orleans failed. So the charge, that
right.
$17 billion shouldn't go to the NFIP policyholders. That should go to the Army Corps of Engineers. And also, in New Jersey specifically, Dr. Stu Farrell came out and said, if we had a properly built dune system, which, by the way, is fully funded, and they've been fighting for years about this dune system in New Jersey, we would have had very minimal damage from Hurricane Sandy. So these are all failures of our state and our federal governments that the national flood insurance policyholders are supposed to carry. And the last example, and I'll give you the I don't even know what adjective to use, is 1% of all flood policyholders account for 33% of all claims. That's $17 billion in claims, 1% of the people. And these are called repetitive loss properties. And I'll give you the example of the home in Humble, Texas. It's worth $118,000. It repetitively flooded. You know how much they gave this gentleman to rebuild his home over a decade? Give me a number.
How much?
It's worth $118,000. How much you think?
Four times, you'd think 400, you know, at least half the value. So, you what? With
$200,000? $2 million. You could have bought the house 17 times over. $2 million they gave this guy for a house that's worth
$118,000. Wow.
That is our problem. We need to fix the NFIP and run it like a business, not like, and no one's gotten fired from any of these programs. Nobody's got fired for the lack of whatever. But anyway.
Well, I'm
That's
glad
a
to
big
hear
time.
You bring up about that other side of it. Because, yeah, I'm glad to hear you bring up, you know, that case of the 1% of the policyholders. Because that's actually what Congress always uses to hold over their head to say, you know, well, they don't use 1%. They just talk about the repeat and why are people living in flood zones and why are we paying for all this. And I think the information you all are bringing to the table is very valuable. People have to get that there are there's definitely a total lack of common sense and a total lack of it running properly. So what's your next step? How do you intend to change the flood maps?
We've changed. Well, I'll give you a little bit of history. After Sandy, FEMA came out and gave us some new maps, and they raised our elevations by 4 feet across the board and put us in more restrictive zones. And I'll give you an elevation. If anybody's from the New York, New Jersey area, the iconic picture of the Manilocan Bridge where a river came where there was homes between the bay and the ocean, there were homes there. They kept those in a less restrictive zone as opposed to people who are a mile up a creek, and they put them in a velocity zone. It did not make common sense, let alone scientific sense, the way they redrew these maps. So in March and April, May, we had rallies up and down the coast of New York and New Jersey. We fought and rolled those maps back 80% in elevations and flood zones. And that's how we fought them originally. Now our towns are fighting them again. But there's 22,000 communities in a flood zone. It costs $50,000 per community. It's over $1 billion we have to spend to fight the maps. Why is FEMA or the company that's producing these maps not getting fired and not getting penalized? We have to spend $1 billion to say you're wrong. And this is the problem with our government.
There's lots of problems with our government. But, hey, Joe, I want you to dive in here.
That's a whole nother show, Dave.
That's a whole other show. Yeah, we don't want to go there. We debate that all the time. Joe? We have lost Joe up here. Hopefully not. But when you see this overwhelming out... Oh, there you are. You were muted probably. Go ahead, Joe.
I was muted. No, it seems to me like I want to take a little step out of order, I think, because I'm wondering, and my guess is the listeners are wondering, what is in the bill before Congress? We've talked a lot about the bill passing one place and it's pending in another. What does that bill do?
The bill keeps changing and reforming, and you know we can't give anything 100% because they're drafting a new bill in the House, and we don't even know if it's going to get passed. But the bill that got passed in the Senate was basically, please listen to this, they're going to postpone the implementation of the Biggert Waters Act that's already been implemented in October of 2013. So we can have an affordability study. Yes, we're going to postpone the implementation of a bill that's already been implemented. Now, the bill required an
only the federal
study.
Government could make that statement. You're about the federal government. Could you make that kind of a statement? That's unbelievable. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Exactly. The affordability study, do we really need to spend $5, $10 million to have a PricewaterhouseCooper affordability study? $30,000, we have one gentleman, $65,000 flood insurance premium. His home has never flooded for a $250,000 policy. FEMA is telling us once every 4 years, this home is going to be a complete loss. It doesn't make common sense, let alone actuary sense. And that's what we want to get to, okay? But to get back to the bill, the bill is basically going to postpone things as we are. We still have a very long way to go. We don't need to just postpone it. We need to fix the maps. We need to fix the actuary rates.
Right.
We need to get the repetitive loss properties out of there. There's 100 other issues that have to get resolved. We're trying to keep the message simple. Two or three issues that we discussed here today. And then once we open up the bill, we need second homeowners. You know, they're not giving help to any second homeowners whatsoever. And these folks drive these communities. If you go to South Carolina, if you go to Florida, if you go to the Jersey Shore, these are all second homeowners. These people are getting no help whatsoever. Now, this bill does not postpone everyone's flood insurance rate increases, only selective people. This is like the IRS code. The government got involved, and it's not black and white. So only selective people will be affected by not having the exorbitant rise in flood insurance premiums. But furthermore, the maps, your flood insurance rate increase, you get affected by when your maps are firm, called final. And a lot of places throughout the country are getting these new maps. The folks in Lycoming County, where Jeff Smead lives, by the way, Jeff Smead is 560 feet above sea level in Pennsylvania, okay? So you know it's not – there's no sea level rise in Pennsylvania, okay? And,
right.
And, you know, they got their maps now, and that's why things are boiling up in Pennsylvania. But South Florida is not going to get their maps till 2017. So why does poor Jeff have to pay his flood insurance until those folks in South Florida get their new maps in 2017?
Wow.
Again, it's not fair and equitable. And that's the whole problem with this whole thing.
I think the short answer in all this is that if it's possible, and this is what we'd love to accomplish, is a complete reboot of the maps, FEMA,
even the Army Corps of Engineers, and there's got to be some smart people out there, even in the insurance business, who can come in, put their heads together and say, let's start from scratch on this thing, let's reboot this, and let's figure out the money. I don't even think, and George, I'm sure you'll agree with me, this is not really hard. It's a pretty simple thing, and it doesn't, and it shouldn't matter if you're an investor, a homeowner, a second home. I mean, we're not talking second homes that are, you know, Donald Trump mansions on Palm Beach. We're talking people even who buy condos. Condos have to buy the insurance policies for the entire buildings and then distribute the dollars to everybody. And if you're 2 miles in from the beach in South Florida, in, let's say, West Palm Beach, and you're in a 20-unit condo building and they get a bill for $150,000 and they got to whack it up between everybody, these people can't afford it. These are, you know, $150,000 condos. It's really, really hurting everybody, and it's really all over the country.
It has a bigger picture, you know, Fred, is the impact it's going to have on a real estate recovery, whatever kind of real estate recovery we have. And there is definitely one way, no question about it, maybe driven a lot by investors right now. But, I mean, it just really has it. And interesting, now, something that's near and dear to Joe's heart, he has a home, the second home that's in near the water here in town. I was hoping to see it this weekend. They go to a track meet, right? Track meet ran longer than I thought. But second homes, you say, are not – explain that second home concept.
Basically, the way the bill is written in the Senate, not we don't have anything in the House yet, is basically it's going to help the primary homeowners. Secondary homeowners are going to go what's called the actuary rate. They're going to get a 20% increase. But here's the crazy thing about the 20% increase. If your flood insurance is currently $1,000 a year now, and it goes up to $11,000 a year, okay, in 5 years,
right,
you have to get to $11,000 a year. Well, if you're paying $1,000 a year, and I told you you're going to have an increase of 20% for 5 years. Well, your first year you're paying $1,000. Your zero year you're paying $1,000. Your first year you should pay $1,200. Right, that's 20% of $1,000.
Right.
Correct. No.
Right.
The way FEMA tells it to you is it's $1,000. It's 20% of the difference of your actuary rate and your current rate, which is $2,000. So your zero year is going to be $1,000. Your first year is going to be $3,000. Second year is going to be $5,000, $7,000, $9,000, and then $11,000. You have to get up to $11,000. So even that 20% increase, it's 20% of the difference of your current rate and your actuary rate, which is really a 200% increase for the next 5 years. But those are the issues that we're trying to get out and say, hey, something. These are not the correct numbers here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you got the correct numbers. Absolutely. We're so far off script from what we wanted to get. I want to make sure we get through the issues. Joe, I brought up, apologize for announcing the world about you, but any thoughts that you have? Any other questions that you have as we look? We got 7 minutes to wrap this up.
Wow.
Less than that. We actually have about 5 minutes. So this has just gone so fast. But go ahead, Joe.
Yeah. Well, a quick question is, one is, this I assume is a call to action, and you need help, and I wondered where the Mortgage Action Alliance is on this.
I know the National Association of Realtors is on board with us, the American Banking Association is with us, and I don't know where the Mortgage Association is with us. I can tell you where we are with
us. I think the NBA is with us. The NBA is
yeah.
with us. And NAMB
yeah.
also, and NAIHP, and brokers. Everybody sees the problems. I mean, you know, especially with Dodd-Frank and our 43%, I use it 43-star number. You're going to have to qualify people with this flood insurance number, and you're going to scare the bejeevers out of people. And realtors need to know this because they're out there trying to get people into houses, and especially the area we were talking about offline before is Louisiana. These people are out of their minds right now because everybody is getting pushed up. And people are just not going to be able to qualify for a home because of what the new pricing is going to be for flood insurance.
Or the value of the home is going to go down.
Let me give you two stories in Plaquemines Parish. A gentleman, his name is Eddie Duran, raised his home after Katrina. He was required to raise his home after Katrina. You know what he's got to do now because they gave him new flood maps to raise the elevation? He's got to raise his home again or pay the exorbitant rise in flood insurance premiums. Raise it again.
Oh,
what's going to stop FEMA from coming back and telling us we changed the elevation 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now, and you have to raise your home again? So we have to push back. Now, to get back to Fred's comment about let's change this whole thing, I totally agree with him. And here's what we've done. There was a similar bill that got passed in the Senate recently. It was on the Senate floor about 5 months ago, and Senator Toomey from PA blocked the bill from even coming in subcommittee and blocked the bill from even being voted on the Senate floor. So this time when we had the bill, we focused on Senator Toomey. We tweeted him over 15,000 times in a 4 or 5 day period. We went out to Lycoming County and had rallies in Lycoming County, PA. Representative Marino from Pennsylvania came. What a powerful message when a representative from the House comes unannounced to an advocacy meeting, right? It's a powerful message. And he came to us. And he not only did he vote for the Bigger Waters Act a couple years ago, he came out to our group and actually said, I'm here and I'm putting a bill in the House to repeal the Bigger Waters Act. Now, how strong of a statement is that?
Yeah. Well, it's strong on a number of fronts. Number one, it's amazing what you can do when you roll up your sleeves and get to work and work. This is a huge, huge issue that has a huge impact. But it's not to say that you can't do it across the country. Alice, I want you to get in here. I'm looking at 4 minutes left on the broadcast, actually less than that, 3 minutes. I want to get any questions that you have that we have not covered.
Well, I guess I just want to make sure folks are clear, too, you know, that the bigger Waters Act also included things for servicing. So, you know, folks who are listening to this and maybe just you're looking at, well, do I originate in an area that has a flood zone or I service, you know, I guess I just want to give everybody a heads up. This has implications for lenders as servicers, not just upfront to the homeowner and everything you all have been talking about the impact to the market and the cost to the homeowner. I mean, think of all the loans that you've got in servicing right now that now this is happening to your customers who you have now. This isn't just about new business coming in that's impacted.
And
jump on that, Alice. FEMA and the NFIP, if you don't pay, you know, if you have a federally backed mortgage in a flood zone and you do not pay your flood insurance now, the fines have tripled or quadrupled. So that is very important for that part of the industry.
Yes, so the lenders are now having, if the customer goes, forget you, I can't afford it, the lender's going to pay it. They're going to have to force place it and try and get water out of a rock.
Good luck with that. Hey,
well,
I just want to make sure
Kind of a strange acronym, is that a kind of a strange analogy when we're talking about flood zones, I guess, right?
I just wanted to make sure that I added one last thing on the politics, because that's kind of my little thing, that I want people to understand that this obviously is a nonpartisan issue, but as I follow this in Twitter and Facebook and all these great groups, and there are hundreds of them, I want to let you know that most of these people are conservative Republicans who have been hit by this. And the conservative Republicans in the House are the ones that are blocking this. So can somebody explain that to me? Because
George, you're getting me going on that one again. I am one of those guys, and I can't believe it. It's just, you and I debate on we debate on national television, then afterwards we get together and talk about it, and so it's just none of the arguments and who's behind this, who's not. They're obviously not thinking about it. Now I'm looking at 2 minutes or less before they shut the mics off on me. What can people do to get involved? Where can they go? What's the most effective path to rolling up their sleeves and joining in with you? And now sounds like thousands of us on this initiative, George.
Yes, what you need to do is please, if you have a Facebook account, Stop FEMA Now. We have Stop FEMA Now groups. Our main group is called Stop FEMA Now on Facebook. We have New York, New Jersey, Florida, Louisiana, California, you name it, we have it. If you don't have, we have StopFEMANow.com. We're on Twitter, at Stop FEMA Now. We're on YouTube, Stop FEMA Now. Please join us. We are looking to go down to Florida. Florida has 2 million of the 5.5 million flood policies. If you're listening in and you're from Florida and you're a banker, you're a mortgage guy, you're a real estate professional or a homeowner, please join us. There is power in numbers.
And, yes. And please, also, if you are in the mortgage business or the real estate business, especially realtors and affiliate mortgage people, go to your local association of realtors and keep pounding this. NAR is doing a good job, but we need to keep the pressure monumental. We need them to just say, yes, we will do whatever you want in Congress. And
George,
also, we
Fred,
have a Twitter thing of FEMAGate. Go to FEMAGate for Twitter. FEMAGate. It's a lot of fun, too. FEMAGate.
Oh, yeah. FEMAGate. I love it. Another four-letter word. Well, thank you so much, George and Fred, for being a part of the broadcast, making us aware of this. Also, I'm just really encouraged by the fact that what you guys have accomplished was so – it's just getting this thing started. If folks, if you don't think you can make a difference with your voice, nothing could be further from the truth. Excited to be working with you, each of you guys, as we continue to get the word out. Folks, have a great week. Happy President's Day. Tune in next week as we deal with these issues related to the mortgage industry, so many of them. Have a great week, everybody. See you back
here
next week.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.